San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And if you download the app for 760 KFMB, you can hear us on your smartphone. And we're free on iTunes. Just search It's Your Money and Your Life. And now it's time to introduce the main man of the hour. He is a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a philanthropist. He's a best-selling author and a family office expert advising several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. It's been a fun week.
Boy, are we having some heat, aren't we?
Yeah, this weather's fairly warm, but as I say, it's dry heat.
You know, the heat recently with the humidity was more of a bothersome.
Yeah, it was tougher.
I really kind of
but
just
exciting
doesn't bother
week,
me that much.
My older daughter Mia had her first day of classes at UCSD on Thursday.
Yes.
And of course, we had Chancellor Pradeep Khosla on recently
in June.
June,
right before
show.
Commencement, and she was in the studio that day and asked him a question.
Absolutely. So she's starting at UCSD. Very exciting.
So if any of you want to hear that interview, it's a great one.
It's a great interview.
Just go on our website, iymoney.com. I should always mention that.
But school is in session. So.
Absolutely. So let's see. What else to talk about? Well, Padres are out of it, and the World Series is starting, the playoffs, and the Chargers are doing great. And life goes on.
But.
Yeah. Speaking of heat, boy, I did go to the game. I got a ticket last week, and they said it was a lot cooler than the Seattle game. It was 120 degrees on that field. So,
holy cow.
And that was with the humidity. So, but anyway, we're
no
ready.
No wonder Philip Rivers is so hot.
Hey, we owe the New York Jets, and they're coming in tomorrow. So, you know, let's hope that goes well. Anyway, we've got a terrific show tonight again. Of someone in the political scene here. It's her first time, I think, running for office.
As well as on radio,
yes,
apparently.
But we have, for the first half of the show tonight, the candidate for City Council District 6, Carol Kim. Carol, good evening. How are you?
Good evening. I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is your first time ever running for public office?
This is my first time running for public office.
Well, I wouldn't know it by hearing you speak. I've been to a couple of, full disclosure, I've been to a couple of events and have heard Carol address crowds, and she's real good. So,
you know, I attribute it to my teacher background.
Well, I wanted to get into that because it's pretty fat. Talk about public servant. You know, you've done some of the toughest jobs on the planet here, but let's just, where were you born and raised and schooled, and then let's get into your career a little bit.
Sure. So do you want like the whole background from where
yeah.
I very first started? Okay. So my parents, I'm born from Korean-American immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
My parents immigrated here from South Korea in the mid-70s, and they arrived in Los Angeles. My dad had a job offer. He was just graduated from university with a chemical engineering degree, and he had a job offer from an energy company or something like this. My mother was a nurse a supervising nurse, an RN in a hospital in Seoul. But they came here because they wanted to, you know, pursue greater opportunities for their family and themselves. So they came, they arrived, my dad's job offer fell through and they got stranded. And they were here with $350 between the two of them.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a pretty amazing thing. And so so they got stuck. And so my dad got a job working as a day laborer to start off with, just to survive. And my mother, her English wasn't great. So she started off working as like the lowest level assistant at a nursing home. So that's what they did during the day. And in the evenings, my mom would go to, she'd go to the local clothing fabric, the fabric shops, and she'd buy out the closeout remnants there. And she started making baby pillows and blankets, and they started selling those at the swap meet. And so I was born the next year in 1976, which makes me a bicentennial baby. I always know how old the country is. So on the 4th of July, I can say this year we are 238 years old. So I was born in 1976, and my parents, you know, they literally got, you know, they were small business owners. They started off with a swap meet stall. They worked and saved, and they opened up a brick and mortar store selling women's fashions. Then they opened up a second store. Sometime around when I was in junior high, they sold the two stores, and they opened up a small clothing manufacturing company. And they did that all the way through the time I was in college.
So your dad never got back into engineering.
He followed. No. Yeah. Here that was what the opportunity was for, Korean immigrants who were, limited in their connections and that kind of thing. So, and it worked out really well. I mean, obviously there was a lot of hard work, and we, as kids, we would be out there in the shops all the time with them. And when I was in high school and college, I worked at their company on weekends and afternoons and all through the breaks. Every time there was a school break, we were out there working too. But it was great. And it really taught me a lot about, about small businesses and about how much effort goes into that and what the entrepreneurial spirit's all about.
And then you went to school and college there?
Meanwhile, we grew up in Orange County. So lived in Cypress, and I graduated from Cypress High School, that just up the road, up the 5 and 405 a little bit. And then I went to UCLA for my undergrad. And when I graduated from UCLA, I got a job right out of school working as an emergency credential teacher for LA Unified. At the time, that was 1998. And at the time, there was a huge teacher shortage in Los Angeles. They just couldn't fill the classrooms. And so I got this job. I remember the school was in the inner city. So if anybody's familiar with Los Angeles, it's located between USC and the Staples Center. So, pretty rough neighborhood back then. It still is now, I think.
What school?
Norwood Street Elementary.
Oh, sure. Norwood Street. Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a great school, though. Great community, wonderful teachers, good people. And so, I started teaching there. I took a classroom that was, believe it or not, this is my very first year, took a classroom that was intended for a male teacher. They had put all the tough little boys in there that were, really problematic and all this sort of thing. They had had substitute teacher for a month and a half when I started. Yeah. So, that's where I started work. And I did that for a few years. I worked there not just as a classroom teacher, but
What grade level was this?
I taught third, fourth, and I also helped team teach a fifth grade class. Huh. So third, fourth, and fifth were the grades I taught.
Wow.
Yeah. And, besides being a classroom teacher, I was also the after-school lead teacher for the at-risk program for our boys there that was run in conjunction with the LAPD. I also was the faculty liaison to USC because USC has this program called Family of Five Schools, and it allowed us to bring college students over to help do enrichment programs and that kind of thing on the campus after school for the kids. And I ran the fine arts program there, too. I helped write an arts grant that allowed us to bring artists in residence into the classrooms that taught the teachers how to teach art and helped us develop a real solid art curriculum. And it was good work. It was really great.
So your degree in UCLA must have been in education then, right?
It was actually in English. I was an English major. Yeah. But while I was working at Norwood, I was also earning my teacher's credential because, again, I was emergency credential. And so I was working in the day and going to school at night for my teacher's credential. And I got my master's of education as I was doing that.
So emergency credentials, like bringing in someone in an emergency situation.
Yes. So literally they gave us 40 hours of training and they put us in a classroom.
There should be a movie about this,
That was big news back in 98, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a huge shortage of teachers.
It was a real problem. But I feel like I really had a great opportunity. The school was wonderful. There was...
Well, the city council will be a piece of cake after that, right? Don't you think? So, So how many years did you do that?
I was there for 4 years, and then I was going to continue teaching, but what happened was I got married, and my husband was a graduate student, and he was getting his PhD at a school in upstate New York called Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, which is an engineering...
They have a great ice hockey program, by the way.
Yes, amongst other things. Yeah. So we moved out there for four years while he was doing that work. And while I was there, I worked in HIV prevention for the AIDS Council of Northeastern New York. I wanted to teach, but they had a hiring freeze on the school districts out there because they had, economic problems in that area. And so I went into HIV, and it was a really tremendous work. I worked with active and recovering substance users. I worked with high-risk adolescents, mostly foster care youth who were in facilities because they couldn't be in homes, because they were having that kind of problem. I worked with communities of color. We did a lot of street outreach programs. I ran the transition program that came out of the Hudson Correctional Facility, the state prison that was not too far from Albany where we were located. And I also worked with the LGBT community there, too.
Wow, you look like such a nice, shy, retiring person. I can't believe you did work with these, you know, hardened people, right? You must have won them over, though, right? Care and concern, right?
Yeah, it's just about being open and respectful and realizing that everybody's got very similar wants and needs and issues, and just being able to say, look, you know, we care about you. We want you to be well, and let's figure out how to get you there. You know.
So where did your interest in politics and public service come from?
That's a good question. Well, you know, so when I was doing this work, especially the HIV work, you know, we would run up against a lot of policy things related to policy. So at the time, there were policies in place that were kind of restrictive. I mean, obviously when you're doing HIV prevention, you're really talking about promoting things like safe sex and, you know, those kinds of things. And so we were having problems sometimes being able to do that work effectively because of public policy or health policy around those things. Public health policy generally promotes, and the science promotes specific types of strategies. But, you know, the political sphere actually really impacts how we're able to do that work and carry out scientifically researched, evidence-based programs and interventions when we need to. So, you know, it was one of those things. So that's where I started to really pay attention and care about those kinds of issues. And of course, you know, I was always engaged in the national political conversation that's always going on.
So eventually you moved into the school system in San Diego, right?
Right. So what happened then was my husband graduated and we ended up moving out to San Diego because he got a job offer here with a software company. So that was really exciting and we were glad to move back. Upstate New York was lovely, but you know, I grew up in Southern California, so this was our home. And this San Diego, we got here and it was just perfect. You know, I actually got kind of used to the sort of rural and a slower pace of life that's up in upstate New York compared to L.A. and Orange County. And so when I had to move back, I was a little bit sad about that, losing that. But when we arrived here, I realized San Diego is the best of all worlds.
We'll get more into that in Carol's campaign right after this break. So stay tuned. All right, we are back with Carol Kim running for District 6 from the City Council. Her website is carolkimd6.com, and welcome back. So we left off, you moved back into the San Diego school systems, and let's focus on how you got into politics and all the issues that are important to you.
Sure. So I moved back to San Diego. I started working for an education nonprofit here, and what I do is I write grants for public school districts. Mm-hmm. I do trainings for teachers and principals, and I do evaluations of grant-funded programs, meaning I go into school districts and I help them measure their programs for efficacy and success and whether or not they're reaching their goals. And if they are not, I help them figure out why and get them back on track. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of work I currently do. And, you know, what happened was I started off volunteering with some of the local campaigns here that were happening in San Diego. And I was mostly working on issues advocacy. So I was working on things like comprehensive immigration reform, which is something that really impacts our region. Mm-hmm. We've got not only for the Latino population, but for the Asian Pacific Islander population, you know, and I'm a member of that community. So it's something that a lot of folks don't think about in terms of us, but it does impact us quite a bit. I was also working on gun violence prevention because, you know, as a mother and as a parent and as an educator, it's something, you know, the Newtown shooting had happened, I felt like it was a real wake-up call for us that we need to have some kind of sensible reforms around access to guns for folks who shouldn't have access to them. So there was, you know, I was working on that. And then I was also working on some environmental issues as well and topics, which is, of course, really valuable to us here in San Diego. And I'm really excited about Mayor Faulkner's new climate action plan that he put out. It looks like it's going to be something that's really makes us a leader in doing that kind of work and creating sustainable, healthy communities in terms of our environment.
I just saw the other day that there's an entire town is off the grid here near Julian.
I saw that report too.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. But can you give a brief description of the borders of District 6?
Sure.
None of our listeners know the borders.
Right. So the communities in District 6 include Mira Mesa, Sorrento Valley, Kearney Mesa, Claremont, and the southernmost part of Rancho Penasquitos. So Park Village and Canyon View, which are right south of the 56. So it goes south of the 56, it goes, and then you start at the eastern border, it's like the 15 freeway, essentially. The southern border is Arrow Drive and Mesa College. Down on
smack
the,
dab in the middle is Miramar.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, Miramar is right there on the middle. And then the western side's a little bit trickier because it starts out at the on the northern end out by the 805, but then it kind of curls down and follows Claremont Mesa Boulevard and Claremont Drive for a bit and does some funny in and outs.
We got Qualcomm in there. Mm-hmm. We've had the founding CEO on this program,
Dr. Jacobs.
And of course, most importantly, KFMB is in this district.
That's so. Right.
We're sitting in the district.
We are. Absolutely.
Maybe we'll get you a little auxiliary office right here as well.
That'd be great.
Satellite office in KFMB. That'd be great.
So we have a question that we know the answer to, but our listeners usually don't. Is everybody in San Diego voting for districts or only people in the district voting for the people running in the district?
Only the people in the district get to vote for the for those running in the district. So in San Diego, we've got 9 districts, mm-hmm. and each district is the representative is elected by the district residents. So folks who are registered to vote in the district get to vote, and I hope everyone who's eligible to register will register and participate in November. November 4th is the big day.
And I've got a suggestion to make, because maybe this isn't something you can promote when you're there. Mail-in ballots, especially for a special election, mm-hmm. It's always an enormous expense. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just go to at least for a special election, make it mandatory mail-in ballots, and then why not try to move over to that entirely?
Yeah, that's a good question. Two-thirds of our voters currently are actually vote-by-mail voters. So mm-hmm. they use the mail-in ballot system, permanent mail mm-hmm. absentee voters, as they're called sometimes. And it's great. It actually allows us it's really wonderful because it gives people 30 days to vote, otherwise, if you're a poll voter, then you only have the one day, and it's much harder to get to the polls, as we know, especially if you're working and you have a family and those kinds of things.
Or a student.
Right. Life gets in the way, and it makes it very difficult. So, the mail ballots are great, and mm-hmm. we're hoping more and more people are switching over. Will actually access that opportunity.
I think the entire state of Oregon, it mm-hmm. is law. You have to vote whatever election. It's all by mail. I guess state and federal. I'm not sure about local.
I think locally we like our I voted stickers.
Right, exactly.
I hear that a lot, actually. I like to go down to the poll and get my sticker.
You get them in the mail, don't you, or don't you? I don't know.
I don't think
you
get them.
They should mail. You get that little strip.
You get the strip thing. Mm-hmm.
And you get a free drink somewhere. I usually take mine out and get a drink.
So, Carol, what are the basic tenets of your program that you're running on?
So, we're running on basically making sure that we're addressing the needs of the community. So I'm a community member. I've lived here for 7.5 years now. This is where we bought our first home. My kids go to the local public schools. We want to make sure that we're really addressing the needs of the folks who live here and the businesses that are operating here. So we're talking about things like making sure that we are addressing infrastructure issues. Obviously, our roads are a mess. Our mm-hmm. plumbing and pipes are failing us. It's just we've got to take care of it, and it's going to become worse and worse. We've been watching it, deteriorate mm-hmm. for a while, and it's got to be addressed. The other thing, of course, is public safety. There's a huge public safety police officer retention and recruitment crisis that we've got in the city. We're leading officers to other jurisdictions and agencies, basically, mm-hmm. because we can't afford to keep them with the salaries we're offering.
And you get a few bad apples in there, and it really makes a mess of it, because most of them are wonderful people.
That's right. And the thing is that when the folks that we're losing are our really experienced officers, mm-hmm. the ones that got 5 to 15 years of experience. And those are the guys the men and women who would be supervising and monitoring the younger officers mm-hmm. and providing that kind of mentorship and training and allowing them to grow into the types of officers we need. And when you're losing those experienced officers, that means that you may have more issues with behavior and other problems, like those bad apples that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So and then veterans, I see that's on one of your agenda
items. That's right, that's right.
What can we do for them?
Well, I've actually worked quite a bit in school districts with military family programs. So I know I'm really familiar with the issues and needs of military families, which is great. And I think we can do more to support them here. In District 6, we've got quite a few living here. And then we've got a huge veterans population, of course, as well. And I think part of it is making sure that there's work opportunities for them when they come back and they're reintegrating into civilian life, making sure that business owners know that there are work credits that they can, mm-hmm. tax credits that they can receive when they employ veterans. Just making sure and then also addressing some of the homelessness issues that we have.
How big is that issue in your district?
The homelessness issue is not as big in our district, but what people have been saying to me is that they've been noticing a growth mm-hmm. in the number of homeless mm-hmm. that are, just in the community more and more. It used to be something that was sort of south of the 8. Mm-hmm. but now we see them in Claremont. We see homeless folks in district in Mira Mesa.
And the youth, you know, a lot of youngsters are on the streets.
This is true. In Barrio Logan, there's actually a school that's 25% homeless kids, 25% in the San Diego Unified School District. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of homeless families and students.
Well, we'll put you in touch with Judge Coates, too, because he's been working with the homeless for years. He wrote a book, A Street Is Not a Home, and he's been on this program. And you probably have
Yes, I've met him. He's tremendous. You know, yes.
So there's a lot of good programs out there. Mm-hmm. That one facility downtown that they converted that used to be the publishing book house,
The print house.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a homeless center. They're having great success, aren't they, as far as
I think they are. They really are. And I think, you know, the evidence-based models show that are things like the housing first model, right, which is basically you house the homeless first, you help them create stability and security, and then provide the wraparound services they need to provide the support to address their other diagnoses that may exist, and then get them back on their feet. And that's how you get the homeless on off the streets and really self-reliant again.
And then the VVSD down on Pacific Highway, they're doing great work down there as well. So let's see. So streets, sewers, all that. I mean, as far as budgeting goes, you know, the other day I heard someone from the Arts Commission speak, and a lot of their budget goes toward tourism, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, why aren't we doing more with that, more within our own borders rather than trying to, you know, using those kinds of funds?
So
that's something to look at anyway.
Yeah, you know. And we, you know, the thing is, this actually has come up in Mira Mesa and in Claremont as well. Both of those communities have a lot of folks who are, we have theater guilds, we have community theater guilds out there. We've got folks who are into performance and sculptural and other visual arts. And we would love to have more public art in this area as well. And it's something that I think would be a real addition, a real contribution to our neighborhoods and our even our business areas. You know, can you imagine?
Yeah, it promotes a sense of community.
Absolutely.
Absolutely it does.
Well, developers are actually, you know, I guess there's some kind of rules and regs that they're supposed to actually include over a certain space, you know, that they have to include art on the property.
Yeah, actually, there's a development up in Mira Mesa called Casa Mira View. It's being done by Garden Communities. Many people might have seen it going up the 15. Mm-hmm. They actually have some really nice, fun pieces of public art that's out on the street. They're right across the street from the elementary school where my kids go, actually. And so that's nice. Yeah, it's good to see that stuff.
So how many voters in your district do you know offhand?
In the district, there's something around 71 to 72,000 voters.
And you've probably knocked on half the doors, right?
Oh, my gosh. I've been walking doors since I think January, and we really started walking heavily in February and March, and I haven't stopped. So these days I walk 7 days a week, several hours each day, but it's the best part of campaigning. I just got to tell you, it's the best part, talking
because
to voters.
Because the people you meet.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic. Yeah. People are so amazing.
And you hold these little forums in libraries, I guess, and in different clubs and organizations.
We do meet and greets at homes of people just in the neighborhoods. We do forums. The community groups do forums as well, where they bring the candidates out and we talk and discuss issues.
And then if they go on your website, carolkimd6.com, there's an events tab there, I see, right, where they could find out where you're speaking next, or if they want to volunteer or work for you, I'm sure there's contact information on there, right?
Yeah, and you know, we're very grassroots, and so we're very volunteer-driven, so it's all, you know, for us, this has been it's been a labor of love by the community. It's been really wonderful to have the support of so many good
folks. And you've got some really notable endorsements here, including another former guest, Nathan Fletcher.
Nathan's been on more than once.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He's a guy right now with his new foundation.
That's doing so much good work for veterans. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But boy, I'm going down the list here. Yeah, I recognize Donna Fry. You gotta like her. So.
Oh yeah, she's terrific. Yeah.
So anyway. Anything else to wrap up? Because we're almost out of time, I think.
I hear music.
Yeah.
Hey, Carol, really appreciate you coming in.
I'm so grateful for you guys having me. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
We'll definitely be in touch. And good luck. Don't forget, folks, carolkimd6.com. And we'll come right back after the new sports and weather. So hang on. We're back with the second half of the award-winning It's From Under Your Life. Time for Richard to thank our sponsors.
Big thanks to our sponsors, UBS, Michael Carrancha, and Drew Freitas, right across the street from UBS in downtown La Jolla on Prospect Street, the best business bank in San Diego. That'd be Regions Bank with Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett. Recent guests, well, sort of, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, his right-hand man was in. Best CFO company here in San Diego. Plato Epic CPAs, our favorite CPAs on the planet, up in Vista, getting ready to hit that October 15th deadline. Brenda Geiger, the law office of Brenda Geiger, estate planning and asset protection. Best business valuation firm west of the Mississippi, that'd be Mr. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Joe, how can our wonderful listeners find out more about our great roster of sponsors?
Well, all you have to do is get over to iymoney.com and get their cursor over to the sponsors tab. There's a drop-down menu there, and all the great contact information, history, bios, and everything else is there. That's all you need to know. And they've all worked with you for several years.
When you add it all together, it's over 100 years.
With great.
100 years. That's why my hair's so gray.
Great and super success.
Absolutely great success.
But let's get into the second half of our show.
Yeah, we've got another guest. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, another great guest. So it's, you know, sustainability, the green movement, it's all on everybody's mind these days.
We talk about it a lot on the show.
And these folks here, I think, have nailed it with another great concept. But as a good lead-in, just this week I saw Netflix. I still get the DVDs
in
the mail.
You sent me that link. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I get the DVDs in the mail. I also get them online. And I don't know if this film was recently in the theaters. And it was called Fed Up. And it was about the horrible diets everyone's eating and how sugar's crept into all the processed food out there. 600,000 food items. Sugar in some form is in 80% of them. The obesity epidemic is, obvious. And our next guest has come up with one solution to get more healthy. Oh, and one mantra by Dr. Lustig in the film was eat real food.
Eat real food, right.
So that's a perfect lead-in.
That means there's not like plastic wrapping around it.
Right. So anyway, our next guest has innovated a project called Hometown Farms. He's the CEO, and his name is Dan Gibbs. Dan, welcome. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Richard.
Yeah. Oh, our pleasure. So I'm a big fan of Whole Foods, but when I take my daughter there, we buy five things, and it costs about $47, and I have an issue with that because I make a little bit of money, but a lot of people don't make a lot of money. And you know, I think what they're doing is great, and John Mackey, of course, is behind Conscious Capitalism, which I think is a great movement, but I think people should be able to go out and get real food who can do so affordably.
Absolutely. And really, that's why my partner, Mike Castro, and myself started the company. Our whole mission really was, and our thought was, is that, you know, everybody wants to eat healthy. Everybody wants to take care of their family. But if you can't afford it, mm-hmm. then you go to what you can afford. Right. And unfortunately, because of big business, most of the things you can afford are terrible for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Well, one point in this film was, it wasn't even such a cost issue. It's just the marketing and the advertising. It's the big food, big sugar, big advertising industries that are bombarding kids and all of us with these foods that aren't really these Carl Jr. I shouldn't mention a particular brand, but those hamburger commercials on TV with it, you need three people to hold them.
Yeah, and, you need a widescreen TV just grease, to see the burger.
There's enough calories in one burger yeah. that you should have for the whole day.
I'm right.
Yeah.
Right.
So cheese and bacon and this and that. Although we did have Slater's 50-50 on here once, but I guess once in a while it's okay. But you guys have really innovated something terrific here.
But Dan, leading up to that, my grandfather owned a dairy farm in the Central Valley, but. Mm-hmm. A challenge we have here in California is land is so valuable, and farms typically are situated on land.
Absolutely.
But you're not really situated on land, are you?
Well, actually, we're on land.
I mean, you're on land.
We got a greenhouse.
But it's a different kind of format that greatly reduces the cost of shall we say, the premises.
That's absolutely it, because obviously urban farming has been around since mm-hmm. forever. And the only reason that it hasn't really taken off is because of the economics. It takes volunteers, government right. subsidies, or free dirt, sure. Free land given right. by somebody.
And the transportation costs.
That's it. So really what we looked at is how can we take that land and make it economically viable to feed the masses at affordable pricing? Mm-hmm. So as you're alluding to, Richard, we use airspace. Israeli, Dutch, Spanish growing systems, they use the air as well as the ground. We can yield 500,000 pounds. Versus 20,000 to 40,000 pounds of what traditional farmers mm-hmm. that farm in the dirt get.
So what was the catalyst for you to go into this business venture? Because I know you're a very successful business person. We're not going to go into your background. Did you want to do something good for the community? Did you just, huge fan of eating healthy? I mean, what was behind your decision to move in this direction?
Me and some friends took a company public self-heating container. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I realized that even though we use recyclable plastic metals and the heating element was the mineral limestone, it was going to go into the land dump. And we did really well. And at that point, I realized I didn't really win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized that, okay, anything I do for the rest of my life is going to be positive. I went into renewable energy and nutrition, consulted for companies for about 3 years in that industry. And then out of that consulting and picking those two different positive mm-hmm. industries, I was able to see this, hooked up with my partner, who's really the brains behind this high-tech natural growing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but where'd you get the idea for, I mean, this is vertical gardening essentially, right? In urban settings. Did you see this being done? When did the light bulb come on?
I had a group of doctors that wanted me to bring products to market for them. I realized that they were nutraceutical mm-hmm. instead of whole food based.
Sure.
And when I did my homework and realized that nutraceutical is better than pharmaceutical, but it's minus the enzymes and the probiotics, I realized it wasn't for me. And I passed because I swore to myself when I left the can thing, I was only going to do positive things. And so I met my partner a few years prior. I knew of his expertise and brilliance in this area. And so when the idea dawned that, okay, we've got to get into this whole food business, I gave Mike Castro a call. He had all the brains and the knowledge and expertise to do it.
Well, that's what you need. Well, I'm looking at your website, hometownfarms.com, and your bios are all there. It's very impressive, the backgrounds of all these people, your advisory board. I mean, when did you guys go start? I mean, how long has this? This took a long time to put all this together, right?
Absolutely. This has been about a 6-year journey. And, you know, most times you'd say, okay, it took you 6 years to start your business. What are you, nuts? You know?
Yeah.
But when you have to change laws and you're the first one to do something in the city and the state, and those folks, which are great folks, don't know how to interpret the laws for what you're doing, it takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And then when you got to go to the investment community and say, hey, there's this thing is coming and nobody can see it. It takes years mm-hmm. for them to catch up.
Mm. Gotcha. It's pretty incredible. So,
everybody should go to your website and look at the video.
Yep.
Because that's really amazing.
Yep.
Thank you.
Hometownfarms.com. The video is impressive. How long did that take to make? That probably took a little while, huh?
Yeah, it took us a couple months to put together. But it really spells it out.
Yeah, it's great.
Right, wonderful. Well,
we'll
come
right here.
Yeah, we got to take a break. We'll come right back with Dan Gibbs, CEO of hometownfarms.com. Hang on. Be right back. All right, we're back with the CEO of Hometown Farms. They're going to revolutionize organic farming in the way it's done in urban settings. And we have the CEO himself, Dan Gibbs. So welcome back, Dan.
Great. Thank you.
Richard, you wanted to get into some of the...
Well, I wanted to ask a question about distribution because I know a lot of the cost with regard to the retail price that consumers pay for food isn't really the cost of the food. It's the cost of getting it from where it was to where it needs to be.
Absolutely.
And that's roads and traffic and gasoline and
everything
all
else.
Kinds of things.
Yeah, the numbers that I've seen is that the distribution part, the people that touch it between the farmer and the retailer take up about 58 to 60 mm-hmm. cents out of every dollar. So a big portion of our model is not only growing a larger quantity in the one location, but it's also cutting back on that distribution. So what normally takes hundreds, if not thousands of miles, we do within a 5, 10, 20 mile mm-hmm. radius.
I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, you guys ought to approach LeBron James and Magic Johnson, because these guys, you know, if you get some major to help not only, you know, financially support this, but help endorse it in the food deserts in many of our urban areas. And something like that could be, you know, a really big, a good marketing ploy, don't you think?
Oh, it's not only a great marketing ploy, but it actually helps the people that need it the most. And this model, what's so great about it is really the model. The model can go into a food desert or the most expensive mm-hmm. neighborhood in the country.
Right. Mm-hmm. And literally can fit anywhere.
It fits anywhere. And really, if you're not looking to make great profit, and we've got a nonprofit model that we're doing for foundations and to support nonprofits, and then basically it supplies them jobs, food, and then the excess food mm-hmm. that they can't eat, they sell for cash.
Right.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So you have some existing facilities right now?
If you opened your first one recently,
yeah,
right?
We just opened up our first location up in San Marcos.
Wow.
Where is it located exactly?
It's 2075 North Twin Oaks Valley Road,
so not
San
too far from the Vista City line up off the 78.
Correct. You
gotcha.
Got it.
Okay.
You got
San Marcos.
And
okay.
We actually just got our organic certification today.
Oh,
wow.
Congratulations.
So I think I'm still checking, but I believe we're now the largest certified organic vegetable and berry greenhouse in all of San Diego.
Wow. Isn't that something?
Wow.
How big is it?
We've got a little over 3 acres of net growing area.
Isn't
net
that
growing
something?
Area.
and you stack them up. So how many stacks of plants do you have growing?
Well, some of our stacks and some are vining. So for like tomatoes, one tomato plant will take up 10 square inches. So instead of growing along the ground, it grows along a wire going straight up.
Right.
And, you know, we grow what's called hydroorganically. So we actually grow it in a living organic compost that allows the plants to have like an ecosystem within there to feed themselves.
Now you say this is being done in Israel and other places where other countries are doing this, or way ahead of us already?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually all over the world. And so what we do is we just go around the world and find the best equipment that's the most efficient. And we bring it all together in one location.
But we're number one, I thought. And when I go to the football games, I hear that all the time.
Well, as we know in the food part, we're falling way far behind.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad, for sure.
Thanks to people like you catching
but,
up.
But, so. But the concept of retail farm is a fairly new concept, right? Because usually it's grown where people don't even know, and then it gets to a retailer somewhere else. And your whole point is to have the community just directly access the thing that's being created in the community.
That's exactly it.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
I love the term retail farm.
And it's the only way, because if you can't get directly to the people, you can't give it to them at an affordable price.
Right, exactly.
So you'll put that address on your website soon and have a little link about the...
Absolutely.
Because it's new or just opened, right?
That's correct.
What is your goal in terms of locations here in San Diego County?
We figure we'll have at least a dozen locations throughout San Diego. Okay. And then what we're going to do is open up some retail locations in more denser locations. Mm-hmm. And then that way our growing facilities will be 2, 3, 4, 5 miles away.
Sure.
And then we'll just ship into the more denser population areas.
Right. Makes sense.
Fantastic. This is, you know, I've already sent this video out to like 2-3 people who are, you know, pretty well connected, and they're both blown away by this.
Oh, everybody, you know, we've done a lot of shows on sustainability. Just it's one of the, you know, about wealth, we don't talk about money. We talk about all the other things that wealth really is.
Well, ideas are wealth.
And knowledge and ideas and health.
Absolutely.
And
really the health, and you guys know this is just as well as I'm going to say, but I think for the listeners, I mean, when you eat vine-ripened food, you're getting enzymes and phytonutrients that you just cannot get in today's system because of having to pick it early and then ship it. It's losing it.
But, also the whole concept of community.
Absolutely.
I mean, what you're doing, in my opinion, is going to start building better community.
Yes, because it brings the local community back to a central place to buy.
Exactly. And so you get all these people who are different but in the same community benefiting their own community.
Absolutely.
And I think that's going to be a really neat byproduct of what you're doing.
Do we know what's going
on? Thank you, I agree.
Now, Richard, you have a school foundation. Have we finally gotten the soft drinks out of schools? Are they getting...
Yeah, for the most part. Like my foundation up in Ocean, we have a lot of schools now where you can't get the junk. We have a lot of schools growing their own vegetables.
Have they banned soft drinks?
I don't know that it... one of the challenges has always been that's a way for schools to raise money, which is unfortunate.
Well, that's right.
Correct.
In that movie, going back to Fed Up, which I hope everybody sees, they get into the the advertising by the fast food, the Coca-Cola. Well, I shouldn't say
these names. Yeah, sure,
let them sue me. Let them sue me. I'm lawsuit proof anyway.
So, Dan, at these
wages,
Dan,
Richard.
Dan, just some stats since we're a financial show. Cutting down water and fuel. I mean, what are you talking? 20%, 50%, 80%? What? You know, reductions in water and fuel by farming this way.
Yeah, absolutely. We reduce approximately about 90% of the fuel and carbon output.
Whoa.
80 to 85% of the water reduction.
Yeah, and of course, we're in a drought condition,
which is huge. So, you know, an outdoor field of tomatoes takes, you know, water the old traditional way, about 1 million gallons.
Right.
And we can do it for about 150,000 gallons.
You know, I bet the military bases would embrace this, immediately if we get this out.
For them, I think it's great because I know they're trying to be energy independent, water independent. Mm-hmm. This makes them more food independent.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, of course, we got to get people eating more healthy food. So this is the way to do it.
And by getting it more affordably, now the masses start to eat it. And then when the masses start to eat it, they improve their health.
Absolutely.
It takes the burden off our health
system.
We will
attack this.
Dan, we're going to have you back on the show.
Yes, we have to.
There's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, we have to wrap it right here. But thanks to Carol Kim for being our guest tonight, running in District 6. Thanks to CEO Dan Gibbs of Hometown Farms. His website's hometownfarms.com. Ours is iymoney.com. And you have a great week, everybody. Let's go Chargers and enjoy the nice, toasty weather. We'll see you next time on It's Your Money and Your Life. Good night now.